Welcome to the Savvy Girls Podcast. Today's Malabrigo Day!
Malabrigo Day!
Yay! I'm Deborah.
And I'm Melanie. On today's show, Deborah has way too long an interview, which should be really interesting. And we have shameless self-promotion throughout the show, so sit back and enjoy. And I say, wait, hey, it's just an ordinary day, and it's all your state of mind. At the end of the day, you just got to say it's all right.
Today, as I said in our intro, is Malabrigo Day. So I'm talking about my visit to the Malabrigo Factory. I'm going to play an interview that I did at the Malabrigo Factory. I have so much to talk about. Oh my goodness.
With it, we also have a Malabrigo song today.
That's right. We're going to play the Malabrigo song. But why don't you get started? Because we always seem to start that way. Why don't you start and talk about what's been up with you in the last 2 weeks?
The 2 weeks have passed pretty fast. I've been very busy. I had a cold and then I got better.
Are you all better?
Better than 2 days ago.
Okay.
Let's see. What have I been doing? I have been learning my opera role for Toronto. I spend a good chunk of every day on that. I've been teaching extensively. I have students across New York. And so here we go. Shameless self-promotion number one. If there's anyone in New York who's looking for a singing teacher,
Melanie's your gal.
Look no further.
Okay.
And I have also had a series of very interesting short-term jobs.
Why don't you tell us about some of the more interesting ones?
I will. I sang at, I don't know if this made it on the last podcast. This was that grumpy day when we were editing and then you said it wasn't good enough.
Yeah, I don't think much from the grumpy day ended up on the podcast.
No, this was like after we finished recording when you said the editing wasn't done and we had to change the volume. And I called Mom for about half an hour from Old Navy and complained about you.
Yeah, Mom told me that you did that.
Did she? What did she say?
Well, because I said, you know, Melanie was pretty unhappy about me. And she goes, I know.
Anyway, so that day, before that all happened, I sang at a memorial service at United Nations.
What were they remembering?
Someone who had died, memorial service.
Do you know who?
I do. I don't remember his name now. I think it was a private service. Someone had died and someone's family rented the chapel at United Nations to do a memorial service.
Okay.
Oh, also, if anyone needs a singer to sing at any memorial services, weddings, baptisms, funerals, hopefully not your funeral.
I think we need like a Melanie the Singer theme song that we should play every time you promote yourself.
Well, it's just today. It just seems like self-promotion day.
For you.
For me. Well, you can promote yourself later. Since Deborah and I are from Canada, we both speak French, and who knew that would be such a transferable skill here in New York? I worked two jobs last Friday, I think. The first one was I went to White Plains and I did a voiceover work. And voiceover work is really fun. Basically, you just talk and they record it and then they pay you.
Do they give you a script?
They did for this. This was for a French language tape, so I had to read a weather report in French.
Excellent.
First there was soleil, and then there was pluie, and then there was viande. No, nuage.
So today there's a lot of meat floating in the sky.
Yeah, anyway.
So it went well, did it?
It did. So it went well, and then immediately after that, I went to do French translation at a festival called Ad Eaters, which is an all-night commercial festival. They play one man, Jean-Marie, chose a whole bunch of commercials, all of his favorites from all over the world, and put them all together and played them at this big gala event. So I was his translator, and I had not been told it was a black tie event. I showed up.
Definitely not in a black tie.
Rather underdressed.
Okay.
And for some reason, probably because the translator needs to stay close, they gave me a wristband for the VIP area.
Woohoo!
I know, a New York party VIP. So it was wonderful. Got a lot of swag.
What did you get?
I got a pillow. I got these adorable little ice cubes that blink, blink on and off when you put it in your drink. I got paid. I've got a paycheck. That's good.
Oh, well, that's good.
And a bunch of adorable little red Sharpie markers that clip onto your purse, just in case, you know, you need red Sharpie markers on your purse.
Of course.
And I guess there's been other jobs, but there's just one more that I did today, actually, that I haven't told you about yet, Deborah.
Okay.
I found this posting for a job, and someone urgently, urgently needed someone to write a poem for them. They're proposing to their girlfriend, and they need a love poem.
Oh. Did you get hired for this?
I wrote the poem, I sent it off, and he approved the poem. And I hope it works. I hope they get engaged.
Well, can we hear the poem?
Okay. Do you want to hear the poem?
Well, I hope she's not. I mean, I do hope she's a listener, because that would be cool. But I also hope we're not giving away a surprise.
Well, he's proposing tomorrow, which will be before the podcast is up.
Okay, so let's hear your poem. How long did it take you to write the poem?
About 2 hours, because I kept eating and checking my email and learning music in between. So just to explain, the woman is from India. The pet name, he gave me some information. The pet name that he has for her is either Tushy or Booger.
Tushy in Yiddish means bum.
Bum. So I don't know.
and Booger?
I know. Booger just
like,
means...
Okay, and I suspect that most of our listeners would know that Booger means snot, so...
She is sick constantly. She gets one cold after another. And her favorite line in a song, which there's a line in, I guess, in Hindu in the poem, and that's from a song. It means, I'll be faithful to you forever. Let's see what else. Oh, and her favorite quote is from Winnie the Pooh, and the quote is, if you live to be 100, I hope I live to be 100 minus one day, so I'll never have to live without you. So I took all that information.
That's really sweet.
Oh, what else? She likes red velvet cake. She was taken for a carriage ride on their anniversary. He took her out to the lake for fireworks and all this. Oh, and he bought her a tiara because he thinks she's a princess. He does sound really good. He should maybe...
He does sound like a good catch, but I would be pretty upset if someone nicknamed me Snot.
So this is the poem, Untitled by Melanie. I read it to my mom and she started to cry.
No. Okay. Anyway, I can't wait to hear this. With Feeling.
Untitled with Feeling by Melanie. If you live to be 100, love, I hope that I do too. 100 minus just one day, for what's life without you? You are my Princess Tushy, sparkling like a star. No prince or king or raja has such treasure as you are. Red velvet cake and carriage rides, fireworks at night. My dear, I'll give the world to you. Your smile is my light. Through sickness to health and sick again, I'm faithful by your side. Your reddened nose, a rose to me, by you I will abide. This love, our love, was meant to be, my one, my own, my sweet. My dear beloved Booger, with you I am complete. And this is the line in Hindu. Had ze gujar jana hai, forever darling, you and I, will you give me the honor of being my wife? Sniff, sniff. By the way, if anyone needs any poems written,
Melanie's your gal. You've missed something very, very important, Melanie.
Three somethings very important?
I can't believe you missed it. Why don't you go ahead and tell the story?
Okay. I am going to tell a story about gerbils. So,
okay.
So, living alone in New York as a single girl, it is really hard not to fall into a stereotype. I mean...
Yeah, except that you don't live alone.
Well, that's... Oh,
right.
I guess I don't.
Roommate Leslie.
Leslie's up for the night. I forgot about him.
Who's someone who is not easily forgotten, right? Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Leslie.
Enough about the single.
As a single girl in New York, it's really hard not to fall into a stereotype like single girl with a cat. But I really wanted a pet. So I couldn't get a cat. So I thought, should I get a bird? No, pets aren't technically allowed in birds.
And you're not really a cat person.
No. But if you okay. only listen to our podcast because you have a cat, please. I love your cat. Keep listening.
Yeah, okay.
No dogs allowed. So I thought, I'm going to get a gerbil. Because what girl...
Melanie, all of this is a lie. I'm sorry. Melanie has had a lifelong love of these cute little rodents. And we've had gerbils in our, well, as kids, we had them since what, Mel?
When I was in grade six.
Since Melanie was in grade six. And Melanie has not been without gerbils until recently.
2 long months.
2 months ago, she's had a series of gerbils, not just one never ending gerbil. but her pet
My
died
Lysander
about 2 months
died.
Ago. Her cute little Lysander died. And she was 2 months without a gerbil for the first time in how many years?
We're not talking many,
many,
many
years. Many, many years. So Melanie finally caved in to her.
No. It was, that's the lie. There was no, the minute poor Lysander died, I called my mom up because she was on vacation. My parents were on vacation.
Okay.
And I
said, Melanie was in Edmonton with the gerbil at the time that the gerbil passed away. Melanie called up her mother, probably was sitting in the car in the driveway with the keys, trying to stop herself from getting to the pet store immediately. And my mother banned her from going to buy another gerbil because until recently, they have been Melanie's gerbils living with my mom. Therefore, my mom has been responsible for caring for them.
It's an honor.
Yeah, right. So finally, Melanie moved to New York, and Melanie held out for a good month in New York.
About 3 weeks.
And then she caved. Three weeks.
And I thought, okay, I need to find a gerbil somewhere. So I went to the pet stores, and honestly, I found two gerbils at one pet store, but you can't just get any gerbils. They have to be special gerbils. And for some reason, people here like guinea pigs and hamsters, there just weren't any gerbils.
Right.
I found a small animal rescue society called Katie's Critters. And so I called this woman up, Wendy, who runs Katie's Critters. It's named for her daughter, so it's that's why it's a bit confusing. This is out on Long Island, and she said...
Do they have a website?
They do. I believe it's...
www?
Give me a second. It's a little harder than...
Katie's Critters. Look it up in Google.
No,
got it. Okay.
No.
We could just say that it's going to be in the show notes.
It will be in the show notes, but it's katiescrittersmallanimalrescue.org. Google Katie's Critters. Wendy, who runs Katie's Critters, she's 37 years old, she's a school bus driver, and I'm not sure what her husband does, but she and her husband and her two kids run this small animal shelter out of their house. Upstairs, they have birds, huge birds, many huge birds, and in the basement, they have 70 gerbils, they had about a dozen guinea pigs, hairless rats, rats with hair, Degus.
Are they well cared for?
They're extremely well cared for. This family has no space at all, though. All the animals, their entire house is filled with animals, and they spend all day and their own money caring for these animals. But Wendy is so nice. I called her up and expressed an interest in possibly getting one gerbil. And she said, oh, you know, if you come out on the Long Island Railroad, I'll pick you up at the station. And I thought, oh, a day in the country, ride with a stranger. Sounds wonderful. So I went out to the country and she picked me up and she was obviously distressed about something. So I said, Wendy, what's wrong? Oh, nice to meet you. And then what's wrong? And she said, someone just called and they said they would drown their 28 guinea pigs unless I took them. So.
Oh, no.
We had to make space. I helped her since it was 4 hours till the next train and I couldn't pick gerbils with all that craziness around. I thought I'd help her for a while. We set up for 28 guinea pigs. While they arrived, 5 of them were pregnant. 1 baby had just been born the day before. Oh my god, it was so cute. Guinea pig babies are born with hair on them and their eyes open. Aww. So they're just like these mini pigs.
They're mini pigs.
And it were a mini pig. And the whole time it was like, weak, weak, weak. I want my mom. Weak, weak. I was like, I love you.
Melanie and I kind of have a thing where we imitate the sound of a guinea pig.
Weak, 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 weak. So that's what it was doing. And it was so cute. So... the family who dropped off the guinea pig spent a good 40 minutes debating should they take one home. If they take one of the males home, is there a chance it will be pregnant? I'm serious. I heard them ask this. Oh, and they wanted this, and they wanted a rat, too. And it was like, come on, you guys. You obviously can't take care of your animal. After the family left, I got down to picking a gerbil. And there was one group of about 16 gorgeous lilac gerbils, and those ones are gray with pink red eyes. And these had actually, someone had dumped them on the Long Island Expressway. They had been driving down the road and they just tipped them out of their car onto the side of the road. And luckily, someone driving behind them noticed this and managed to stop the car and gather a bunch of them up. So they were there. They were so cute, but I couldn't separate them. I figured they had been through enough. And then there were these 3 baby boys, and one of them is black, and one of them is gray, and one of them is brown. And they kind of wanted to go home with me. And I was thinking, maybe, and I was holding them, and then the white one, the gray one, jumped up straight in the air and ran away. It sort of escaped straight in the air onto the floor under their washing machine. So I missed my train. We spent about 2 hours trying to catch this little guy, and when I caught him, I knew he was the one for me. So I took all 3, and now I have 3 gerbils.
and we've almost used up the entire podcast time.
I haven't said anything other than prompting questions. And I have so much to talk about. Maybe today this episode could be an hour episode and we can just fit everything in.
Good luck, man. You said you had a lot to talk about. You're already at half an hour and you have a half an hour interview.
Yeah, I know. This is what I'm saying. Oh, because there's still no time Maybe for me so. To talk.
Exactly. Okay.
Sisters, there were never such devoted sisters. Many men have tried to split us up, but no one can. Lord, help the mister who comes between me and my sister. And Lord, help the sister who comes between me and my man.
Okay, I have a list of things to talk about. First of all, I am getting ready for my trip to New York to visit Melanie. You have to pretend you're interested in these things, Melanie.
I was just waiting for you to finish. You said I talked for 25 minutes, apparently.
Melanie and I are going to Rhinebeck. I'm super excited.
Rhinebeck!
And we've actually rented a van, and we were hoping to find some lovely people, some kind, interesting people to rideshare with us. So if you're interested, drop us a line. We're going on the Saturday. We're going to go early-ish. We'll leave New York around 7:30, and then yep. We're going to leave around 6:30. We'll head home again.
Although, well, we'll see. We might find somewhere we want to stop for dinner or something, but yeah, like something around like once that. Once it closes.
Yeah. We're charging enough to recover some of the costs of the tolls and the gas and everything like that. But
and the car rental, since we don't own a car. I mean, we're either renting a small car for both of us or a minivan if we can get a few people in. Kind of fun, like road trip in the country.
It would be fun. I think it would be fun to have a group of people go out. So if you are interested, if you need a ride, send us an email or you can contact me through Ravelry. I am Savvy Girl Deborah on Ravelry. And let us know that you're interested, and then hopefully we can make plans and get a fun group of people together. I think Melanie will probably drive because I will want to knit.
No, you won't. No, you're going to be looking at the countryside.
I cannot believe, Melanie, that you talked for 25 minutes and you didn't actually mention the one thing you have to talk about, knitting.
Oh, shoot. Should I talk about that really quickly? Maybe you should talk about it.
Oh, talk about it not so quickly. Just talk about it. And then I'll talk about some of my things.
Okay. Although I am busy doing all this stuff I'm doing, singing, writing poems and stuff, I'm still trying to pay off my student loan. And it doesn't matter how well-known a singer you are or how good a singer you are. When you owe that much money, you owe that much money and you need to pay it off. So anyway, I needed to get my sister, who is Deborah, a present because she's coming to town. And that's what a good sister does, is get her sister a present. But being poor and cheap, I didn't want to actually buy her a present.
Of course not.
Making her a present would involve probably the K word, which I... Wait, this is kind of ironic, isn't it? Shoot, I was going to say that making her a project would mean I actually had to knit something, which I really didn't want to do. So instead, I found an advertisement for a psychological study where if you knit a scarf for a three-year-old, and they provided all these materials, I'll tell about it quickly, but they provided all the materials, the knitting needles, and you had to choose colors from their selection of colors, tell them how you feel picking these colors, and later tell them how you feel or have felt while you knit the scarf.
I know what you're going to say. I felt bored.
Oh my God, you wouldn't even know, and I'm only about a third done.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway. Okay. So they give you a $20 knitting gift certificate, or was it $25? I forget. It was a knitting gift certificate to a knitting store. So I thought that would be a great present for Deborah, and then I wouldn't have to knit or something. But I realized that actually, that may not have been the best.
You're hilarious.
I may not have thought that through.
So again, here you go again. You're getting paid for knitting.
So yes, I may have gotten paid for knitting, or I mean, I will have gotten a present for knitting. Unfortunately.
Another, you'll get paid to knit again. The girl who doesn't like to knit.
Doesn't like is pretty soft, but...
It's an understatement.
It's an understatement. That is my knitting story. And did you have anything happen to you this week, Deborah, or lately?
Yes. Okay, so first I'm going to start talking about my friend Corinne. I hope it's okay to use your name. Hi, Corinne.
Hi, Corinne.
She actually does listen to the podcast, so I think she'll be a little bit surprised to hear me talking all about her. But Corinne has recently learned to knit, I don't know, about 3 months ago, 4 months ago, maybe 3 months ago. And she started with buying all of her yarn at Michael's and working with acrylics or acrylics with 10% wool. And I kept sort of dropping hints that maybe she should, not that there's anything wrong with acrylics, but she might appreciate knitting with something a little bit
woolier.
Well, like a natural fiber, woolier. And eventually I said, you know what, just let me send you a care package. So I put together a care package with 5 different skeins of wool in it, two a mix angora and wool, and then 3 skeins of 100% merino. And I sent it to her, and she wrote to me immediately after she started working with and said, oh my goodness, I can never go back. This is wonderful. I really, really like the way it feels working with real wool. So because I'm going to New York, it is much cheaper to send things, to send care packages from New York to Canada than it is from Argentina. So I went shopping today to go buy both myself and my friend some presents. We have both been eyeing the modern log cabin throw from Mason Dixon Knitting. And I cast it on recently because I couldn't wait any longer. It's a really simple knit, but I think it's all garter stitch, but it just goes on and on and on and on. But I just really like the way the colors look. Well, whatever colors you choose, I really like the layout. It's just a really attractive looking blanket. And I know Corinne has been really dying to get started on it as well. And so today I went and I picked her wool, and then I bought her a variety of other wool also so that she could make Christmas presents and such. So, and I actually just sent her pictures of what I bought, and she wrote back to me and said, I was actually talking out loud when I looked at the pictures. I kept saying, that's perfect, that's perfect. So I think she's going to be excited to get the package. And remember, I was knitting that blanket for my friend who got married.
I remember, I saw pictures of it.
So my friend received the blanket. It was actually really sweet. This is a mutual friend, Corinne, and I. We're both good friends with this girl who got married. And she went on her honeymoon, and I had actually sent the package with the Afghan in it to Corinne, just because, well, it was easier for her to receive packages than the other friend. And Corinne was actually picking up, well, my other friend's name is Kira. So she was picking up Kira's mail while Kira was away on her honeymoon. And so she therefore had a key to Kira's apartment. So when the package came, she went into Kira's apartment and she lay it out on the bed with the card so that when Kira would get home from her honeymoon, she would find it there, already all set out nicely on the bed. So Kira came home from her honeymoon and she emailed me and she loved it and she loved the colors and she gushed and gushed and gushed. So that was a well-received gift. And I'm actually pretty proud of it. It's a nice looking Afghan. So there's that. What else? I have to check my list of things to talk about. I had a dying day with one of my friends from the knitting group. She came over on a different day.
Oh no! Is she okay?
Yeah, well, she survived. But she sold me some of her blanks and she hand paints yarns. So she came over and we fired up my stove and we tried kettle dyeing. And it was a fun day. I'll definitely use some of the stuff I made. It's not as easy to dye yarn pretty colors as I thought it would be. I really thought that it would be a lot easier, and it is time consuming and energy consuming, and I have a lot of respect for the people who do this full time because it's easy to get a product that's usable. It's not easy to get a product that's amazing. So that was my foray into dyeing. I don't think I'll be taking that up as a full-time career. I do now appreciate a little more what other people go through. And I've been knitting. I've been knitting a lot, actually.
No, you have? Really? Why?
Right. Good. Oh, okay. Yeah. I had gotten some wool samples from Malabrigo and from 100 Pure Wool and some other places. And I really wanted to try them so that when I talked about them on the podcast, I could actually talk talk from my own experience and not just about the pretty colors. I wanted to be able to talk about using them.
And were you going to report back?
Well,
to
what
them?
I'll do is, I mean, they're definitely going to hear the podcast. I'll write back to them and I'll thank them. It's more for the purpose of the podcast and not so much for the purpose of giving the company feedback. I think they know they like their products. By the way, I do too. So I've been knitting a lot of one skein projects.
What's a one skein project? Like, what's small enough? Is it a hat? What is it?
Yeah, well, pair of socks, a cowl, a hat, I think sometimes you can fit a pair of mittens, depending on the size of the mittens. At least, like fingerless gloves.
Have you made gloves before? I don't think you have yet, have you?
I haven't made gloves. I've made one mitten. I have one out of two mittens done. Actually, that was actually a really fun project. I had heard somewhere, I don't remember where, about the thrummed mittens. And I didn't know about these before. I don't know. Have you heard of that, Mel? Thrummed?
No, I know thrumming is...
What is thrumming, actually?
It's when you go...
That's the musical definition of thrumming, I think.
No, just you hear maybe say a gerbil and it's thrumming, and that's the noise they make. That's all.
Is that not a mix between thumping and humming?
Humming. Thrumming.
Okay, I didn't know that. No, but in the knitting world, there's a technique from Newfoundland, actually, where you knit and then in your knitting, you knit in pieces of unspun wool, like pieces of roving.
Oh.
It's like, okay, if you picture a lambskin where you have the wool on one side and just leather on the other, right? And if you were to make a pair of mittens with the leather on the outside, when you put your hand in, you would feel the softness and the warmth, but you wouldn't see that from the outside, right?
Okay.
So making thrummed mittens is basically you knit in fluffy pieces of unspun wool on the inside of the garment, and then you leave the outside, and it just looks like plain knitting. And if you turn it inside out, you'll see that there's like all this puffy warmth, puffy fluffiness, but it doesn't show on the outside. All it shows is, depending on what color you're knitting it with, you'll just see little spots of color.
That's very cool. So you've made one mitten.
I've made one mitten. Tomorrow I'm making the other one. Tomorrow's my day to make mitten number two. I think that there'll probably be some really warm mittens. And I'm going to donate them to Mom now that the last sibling has moved out. She's going to be shoveling the drivewalk a little more this winter.
Oh, the drivewalk.
Oh, my goodness.
That's really hard.
The driveway slash sidewalk.
Hard to shovel. Darn drivewalk.
Oh, that's a little bit silly of me, isn't it?
That's my sister. Always loquacious.
Always loquacious.
And we're keeping that in.
Okay. I'm okay with that. I said that and I didn't even realize that I was saying something silly.
No, you didn't. Are you done talking about your stuff yet? Can we bring a word back or are you still tough?
No, that's fine. Let's bring a word back.
Okay. No, we can keep going about
knitting.
No, I want to.
Let's bring the word back that we brought back when you were grumpy.
Well, we didn't bring it back when I was grumpy because it isn't back yet.
Okay,
we tried.
That's right,
we tried
that's
and right. failed. It wasn't okay. me being grumpy. It was sort of a combination of many things, mostly you being annoying.
Mostly you being... You were really grumpy that day.
I had better... It was a beautiful... Just... I hate knitting.
You're hilarious. You say that one more time.
I hate knitting.
I want that to be our sound clip.
No.
Every time you talk about knitting now, we're going to put in that. I hate knitting.
It's so boring. I can't stand it. This is what my mom had to hear for like an hour. I was like, Mom, I'm in the dressing room of Old Navy, and I came here to buy something for my sister, and instead I have to complain I hate knitting. By the way, I still bought you a present.
Ooh, I like presents.
A word back.
Okay, well, what word are you bringing back?
This week, the word I'm bringing back is dungaree.
Okay, I'm looking it up on Wikipedia, and it says a dungaree is a Hindu goddess. Dungaree is a type of onion.
Not what I meant.
Dungarees, jeans or overalls made from denim.
That's it.
Which is what you meant. Or my favorite definition, a dungaree is an Australian cowboy.
Well,
I like the cowboy.
I mean, when you go out to score some dungarees, are you...
Yeah, as long as
exactly
we're talking about something other than an onion. That's right. Okay, so where did you hear the word dungaree?
Who knows these things? I hear all sorts of things in the city. Most of them dirty. Okay, I was doing a commercial. This is ages ago now, though. I was doing a commercial, an industrial commercial. We just had to pretend we're at a baseball game. It was actually really nice. I went to Staten Island. We shot at the stadium at Staten Island, and I had to get there at like 6 in the morning, which meant I left home at 3:30 in the morning.
You know what would have made the day easier?
A car?
No.
The caffeine?
Well, maybe.
A good book to read?
Maybe all of those things, but you know what I'm getting at.
Well, what, I wonder? What could you be talking about?
Well, given that you had to sit around for 8 hours, a little bit of K-N-I-T-T-I-N-G would have made the day go by a little faster.
Or slower. Anyway, the guy I end up sitting beside, randomly enough, it was this guy, and he knows everything about Irving Berlin music and Gershwin music, and we spent the whole time basically singing show tunes all day. But they're not even show tunes, it's earlier than show tunes, but we just had a really good time. He kept on getting in trouble because he couldn't keep his mouth shut when we were supposed to be quiet, but, you know, it was just, you don't usually get to hang out with gangsta types from Brooklyn who sing Gershwin.
Yeah, that's pretty uncommon.
So I was sitting there in the stands, and I, for some reason, I don't know why, I brought up the podcast, and I mentioned that we needed a word to bring back. I asked for suggestions, and suddenly everyone around me had all sorts of suggestions. And some of them I'm hoping we'll use on later shows, so I don't want it. All the only ones I can think of are ones I want to use later.
Okay, so then we won't talk about the suggestions.
But there were all sorts of wonderful suggestions, and everyone got into it.
Okay.
So then the guy beside me, he suggested dungarees.
Do you know his name?
Yes.
Well, why don't you do a shout-out?
Hey, George!
Hey, George!
I'm shouting out to George. George, you're awesome.
Thanks for the word.
Thanks for the word. He suggested dungarees. He said that is a word that is, there's no reason why it changed to jeans. And you know what? There is no reason.
Well, let me look up jeans on Wikipedia and if it says anything about the... The word jeans comes from French phrase bleu de Gênes, literally the blue of Genoa. Jeans fabric or denim originated independently in two places, the French town of Nîmes, which denim owns its name to, and in India, where trousers made of denim were worn by the sailors of Dunga, which came to be known as dungarees. Ooh, very interesting.
And when you think about it, why blue? Probably they just had a surplus of blue dye.
Traditionally, jeans are dyed to a blue color using indigo dye. Approximately 20 million tons of indigo are produced annually for this purpose, though only a few grams of the dye are required for each pair of trousers. No, I don't know why blue. I don't know why blue. But I think the word dungaree is wonderful. And I love its history, actually. I really like the fact that the fabric was coming from Dunga in India, and therefore they are dungarees. Well, today I was wearing a pair of dungarees, my favorite pair of dungarees, actually, because they fit me really well, and therefore they're my favorite.
Oh no! Your wife is coming. I'll need to pull on my dungarees and climb out the window.
I love a dungaree that fits me perfectly. There's nothing that feels better. Was that dirty?
The baby gerbils are a little shocked. Yes, so bring the word back. On the theme of self-promotion, I also recorded a demo in the last 2 weeks of some non-opera songs.
Ooh, which song are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. I was going to do Someone to Watch Over Me, unless you have another suggestion. I mean, I looked up history and everything.
Oh, okay. No, that's fine. Do that song.
No, should I do a different song?
Well, no. You know which one is my favorite.
Well, then you introduce the song.
No, it's just my favorite song. Melanie has started singing a couple of... What style are these songs, Mel?
They're ragtime. It's ragtime music from 1914 to 1915.
Who wrote them?
Irving Berlin wrote over... probably about 600 songs in his lifetime. You can get these huge songbooks. It's wonderful. He wrote the words and music to many of his own songs. He actually started out as a lyricist to other people's songs. And he went through a period where he wrote hundreds of songs. And they're all similar because they're the same ragtime style. And so I recorded a few of those this week. By a few, I mean two.
But some of them are really obscure in that they haven't been recorded before. Am I wrong?
You are correct.
Okay. My favorite one that you sing is your idea of a wonderful time.
So this week, since it's only 2.5 minutes, I guess I'm going to play me, Melanie, singing if that's your idea of a wonderful time. And what else is there to say about it? It's,
I think any girl who's been on a bad date will appreciate the message.
Even though it was written almost 100 years ago.
Nothing has changed.
If that's your idea of a wonderful time, written by Irving Berlin.
And performed by Melanie Gall. And so here is the story of my experience visiting the Malabrigo factory. I set up an appointment in advance and I went on a Monday with my travel partners. The Malabrigo factory is located in an industrial park with a lot of construction and ruined buildings. After we made it through security and we parked, we went to the correct building and started climbing up to the right floor. And I don't remember the number, but I know that Malabrigo is located on one of the higher floors. As we climbed the stone stairs, the floors got creepier and creepier. None of the floors were being used, and they were all dark and abandoned and in various stages of disrepair. It actually would have been a perfect location for a horror movie. Actually, I was just in the middle of thinking that very thing and feeling just a bit creeped out when a woman suddenly appeared out of the darkness, and I actually jumped. She introduced herself as Maria from Malabrigo, and she escorted us upstairs to their area, and it was like a breath of fresh air. In this dingy, broken-down, fire-damaged building, there was this sunny, bright, friendly, and yarn-filled oasis. So Maria started giving us a tour of their facilities, and then Antonio, one of the company's owners, joined us partway through. They were extremely open and welcoming, and they were obviously very proud of their work. During our tour of the facility, they took us through the path that the yarn follows. We started in the room where they store all their yarn blanks. The next step in their process was dyeing, and Antonio was proud to show us the innovative way that they have set up their water heating and kettle dyeing system. As Antonio will explain during the interview, they wanted their yarn to have a handmade feel to it, so they weren't able to follow the pre-existing industrial dyeing processes. There were certain things, like their water heating and distribution system, that they invented with the help of engineers so that they could meet their needs. Antonio even explained to me that some university professors talk about the water system in their classes as an engineering case study. I had come expecting to find a large business dealing with significant quantities of yarn, but in reality, the folks at Malabrigo are only able to dye 1 to 2 kilograms of yarn at a time, and they basically have reached their maximum. I have the impression that the current demand for Malabrigo actually is higher than their dyeing capacity. The dyeing process was fascinating. After drooling over all of that, Antonio showed us what I considered to be one of the best parts of the visit. It was their yarn drying rooms. Montevideo, the city, is actually located on the Rio de la Plata, a river, obviously, and therefore Montevideo is pretty humid as a city. In order to dry their wool after it's dyed, they have invented heated drying rooms. These rooms are hot and dry, kind of like a sauna, but maybe four times the size. And from one end of the room to the other, and almost from floor to ceiling, they have hung clotheslines. I was actually overwhelmed when I walked in the room and saw row upon row of brilliant color. It made for some really stunning photo ops, and I have to admit that I actually hugged the yarn a few times. It felt just like a towel feels when you take it out of the dryer. Warm and soft and comforting. The next step in the process was the sorting and quality control. Here there were about three women expertly checking each skein of wool. I was surprised to see that they didn't weigh each individual skein at this point. And then they explained that the women can just tell if something is too small or too big. I guess that's what experience gives you. The next step was skeining and packing. And here there were about six or seven people working. Actually, there was a young man in his young 20s who seemed to be the lace weight expert. He sat comfortably in a chair, listening to his iPod, and skillfully and quickly twisting skeins into hanks and packing them tightly into plastic bags. On another work table, a woman sorted and packed sock yarn. She actually turned out to be really kind and very helpful later on when I was choosing which sock yarns to buy. I had so much trouble deciding that she ended up helping me decide which colors were the prettiest. The best part of the tour was the room where they keep their finished products. Just imagine this. It was a huge space, with floor-to-ceiling shelves along the walls and forming rows throughout the room. And yarn, fluffy, colorful, tidily skeined, filling each and every shelf. The floors were covered in drop sheets and waist-high piles of yarn, uncovered and sitting in the open, more or less organized by color and weight, covered the floors all over. Okay, more than once I was tempted to lie down on these beds of yarn, curl up, and drift off to sleep. Although there was enough room to walk, the space was limited in some areas because there was so much wool. It was a cacophony of color, and I loved it. Actually, one of my travel companions is an amateur expert photographer, and he took so much pleasure in taking artistic photographs of the beautiful and unique shapes, textures, and colors. During our tour, we passed a dark room with yarn piled untidily, filling the entire floor space and going up almost waist high. I asked about this wool, and they explained that the building had suffered a fire about 1.5 years ago, and that a lot of the stock ended up getting smoke damaged. I finally understood why the building itself was so creepy and abandoned. I guess the other floors had been occupied, but companies had left after the fire, and the building was being repaired slowly. Maria also explained that they were slowly trying to wash and salvage the smoky yarn, but that it was a long and slow process. Our tour ended in the administrative offices. My travel partners left to go do some exploring elsewhere in the city, and I stayed to interview Antonio and pick and buy yarn, and of course, to chat. Antonio showed me the new colorways that they were introducing, which are beautiful, by the way, and he showed me the new yarn twist, applied yarn that will actually be released into yarn stores this month, which is October 2009. He showed me their testing area and talked about some of the options that they're playing with. Mixing fibers, natural dyeing, using organic cotton, new dyeing systems and techniques. What really struck me during this visit was that the three owners, who are two brothers and a brother-in-law, and their management team are all really intelligent and well-educated people, and they approach their work in an inventive and imaginative way. After the market crash in Uruguay in 2002 and 2003, they were all without work. So they identified a market niche, which happened to be yarn dyeing and exportation. They made some really smart business decisions. They interacted directly with their customers, and they ended up building a really successful company. What I enjoyed most about Antonio was his accessibility. He was a real person, and he was not formal or snobby. He told me about his family, about the architecture course that he teaches at the university, and about some of the frustrations and challenges that they face in their business. He was also really cute. During the time that I was there, he had me help him translate a few things into English, And he was a little shy, but definitely playful during the interview. And so, before actually leaving the Malabrigo factory, I picked a variety of wool that I wanted to buy. I got quite a bit of sock wool, a number of skeins of the merino worsted, and some of the merino silk. Antonio also handed me a skein of their new twist yarn for me to try, and some cotton to play with. I was sad to leave, but it was a wonderful visit, and I'm so happy that they had accepted to see me. I know I'm doing a lot of talking, but since it's my turn this week to do the audio editing, Melanie can't stop me from blabbing on and on quite a bit. So before I play the interview, I wanted to quickly talk about the experience that I had with knitting with some of the Malabrigo yarns that I got. When I came home from my visit, I immediately cast on a cowl with the merino worsted. This yarn is soft. I mean, really, really soft. And I was amazed by the calm, relaxed feeling that I had when this wool ran through my fingers. I don't know the name of the colorway, and I wasn't able to find it on their website, but it's black with really striking purples, violets, and blues. It knit beautifully, and there was absolutely no pooling. So the next item I made was the star-crossed slouchy beret, the pattern by Natalie Larson. I knit this in, I think, the olive colorway in the new twist yarn. I really loved the pattern and the yarn. The yarn had a slightly more sturdy feel than the merino worsted, but it was still definitely softer than any other brand of yarn I've ever used. I knit it at a loose gauge, and I ended up with a beautiful, even fabric. Finally, I cast on and knit my first ever pair of socks with a beautiful superwash merino sock yarn. I used the colorway Indiecita, which is a mix of light greens with a little blue and subtle pinks, creams, and yellows. This also is applied yarn. I knit my socks at a slightly larger gauge than I needed, but that was my fault. I really loved working with this wool, and the only challenge that I faced was making sure that I didn't split the yarn with all the ripping out, unknitting, and re-knitting that I did. I know, rookie sock maker mistakes are also more my fault than the yarns. My finished socks are comfortable and beautiful, and again, I was working with variegated yarn, but yet I experienced no color pooling at all. Okay. I'm going to stop now. I want to give a big thank you to Antonio, Maria, and to all the staff at Malabrigo. I really appreciated your warm welcome and your generosity. I am so happy to be here. This is Deborah, and I am actually here at the Malabrigo factory. I've come here after a little bit of an adventure finding my way in the industrial park, but this is actually a wonderful place. It's full of wonderful yarns in big piles and colors hanging everywhere, and I think I'm in a knitter's paradise right now. And I'm here with Antonio.
Hello.
And Antonio is one of the three owners of the business. He's in the business with two brothers-in-law, and he is formerly an architect and then got into the yarn business, and I think he's the color expert here because of his design background. Yes?
Hello. Estoy muy contento de que vengas a visitarnos y que conozcas.
I am very happy for you to visit
us
and to get to know our plant.
De comunicación, como estos
thanks podcasts, to your communication system,
mucha
your podcast, lots of people will get to know the things that we talk about. Can you give me a little history? How much time have you been working in this industry with wools? And how long ago did you start your business? It's been about 5 years. And in reality, the business started from nothing, since we really didn't have any knowledge about how all of this worked. But after researching on the internet, and since there is really good wool in Uruguay, and that is really well known, we decided that we would start dyeing wool to match the high quality. Not only soft wool, but to give it something more. But since we didn't know anything, actually the origin of all this was an economic crisis in the region, and we were without work, and we couldn't do other things. So we started trying in my kitchen in a large soup pot. And my wife complained because she couldn't make soup after. And we started testing. And since we didn't have any experience, we started doing things in an artisan way. The dye providers had a lot of information available, but it was always for an industrial dyeing system. Since we wanted to do things in a more artisan way, we wanted to get more variations in color. All the user manuals for the dyes didn't serve our needs. Because of this, we moved forward step by step by step with different tries and different techniques that, since we were working with a lack of information, we tried things and made mistakes that others with more knowledge may not have done. And we told ourselves that our results were design features. We tried many things because we simply didn't know anything. Obviously, we had to do a lot of different tests, and many of them resulted in nothing. And, of course, we tried a lot and achieved some things, and the product developed. How much time did it take for you to teach yourself everything? Do all your tests before you were able to sell your product. Well, in principle, the window was short. We did tests, and we weren't entirely convinced. But we were able to make sales over the internet. And after very few tests, we were able to send out our product and get rapid feedback. With only a few orders, we were able to get feedback directly from knitters, not through intermediaries, not through industry, but from the people who were knitting. And this helped us a lot to guide our path, because people who knit are the ones who know the most about wool, who enjoy the task, and so in one way, with a very precise and fundamental dialogue, it was with these people that we were able to use the feedback and develop our product, rather than first developing a product and then soliciting feedback. How many employees do you have, and what are the different jobs that they have? Right now, we have 25 people working for us. We have different teams that are responsible for dyeing, which is the main task, the heart of the business. We also have some teams for yarn sorting and classification, quality control, labeling, and finally, teams for packaging and preparation for export. We have a few administrative staff members, a few staff members who are chemical specialists who help us with product development to improve the dyeing conditions. These people are permanent. If we have any problems, we have to invent a solution because the industry, or those who manage the industry of yarn dyeing, in general, we can't use. So we have to invent if we have any problems with what chemicals we should add or what to reduce. We are always evaluating. Chemical knowledge really helps us, no? Because when we first started, we knew nothing about chemicals or anything else. All I had was a good sense about colors because of my profession as an architect. and with working with colors.
Antes, cuando hacemos el tour,
before, when we were doing the tour, you were talking about some of the things that you had to invent. I don't want you to tell me the details or give away any of your secrets, but could you talk a little about the types of things that you created?
Bueno, nosotros en este momento combinamos
at that time, we combined an artisan system allowing us to dye only 1 or 2 kilos max, small batches really. But because of the high demand, we tried to industrialize all the other aspects of our work. This was the case of our hot water system that we designed specifically to resolve some problems that we encountered. The engineer that we worked with then showed the system to his students because what we invented had never been done before. Also, the system to dry the wool, we invented that as we went along. Distinct systems to work with the yarn that are, in principle, very traditional, but that, in a way, are new or different from what has already been done by others. We tried and tried and tried, and we didn't give up. And there are some things that we are always trying. Some of what we test ends up on the market, but we never know which ones it will be. We are always inventing lots and lots of different things, so that when it comes time to introduce a new product, we have the choice between many products and not only one. And so we are always inventing and developing different systems of how to produce different colors and how it will look when it is knit up. Since you're talking about your different testing and development, can you tell us about some of the products that you're currently working on?
Me encantaría decir todo lo que estamos probando, pero mi
I would love to talk about everything
algo,
that we are trying, but by experience, I know that when we say we are working on something, people want it right away. I would like to talk about what we are doing, and it is not a secret. But truthfully, our capacity is limited, so we can't produce everything that we come up with, even though many people would really like it. I can list some things, but please don't expect these things to be available in the immediate or medium term. It is very important that I say this. We are doing a lot of testing with merino mixed with angora, with alpaca baby, and silk, mixes of superwash and merino. We are also working with different drying systems for cotton that are unique and that don't already exist here. We are working on a system of patterning or printing with different types of wool, wool that's different from what everyone else knows. We came out with a line of new colors about 2 months ago. We have these new colors in worsted, silky, superwash, and now we are working on new colors for the coming year. Where do your ideas for new colors come from? There are so many choices of combinations. It is very difficult to explain, because a color is not something that exists in the abstract. You can't just think of a color, you have to see it. Many of the colors come from experiments. We then see, these two colors go together well, these not so much. Let's use this one with that one. And it is like that that we generate sequences of colors that go well together. In some cases, we look at nature for certain combinations. At least we use some combinations from nature as a reference. But normally, if you try to translate harmonious colors that are in plants or flowers, when you reach the wool stage and then knit with it, sometimes we have to correct certain things, because it is not always the same to see a pretty color in the landscape and to put it directly in a garment. We have to retouch certain colors sometimes, because in reality, landscape is not the same as the reality for a person. So we can use nature as an inspiration occasionally, but we always have to make a swatch from the yarn to finally perfect the colors. On an abstract level, we use the color wheel, and although it is very abstract, I do use it to take a lot of decisions about combinations. Although I'm not sure that it helps, I still use it anyways. I also use paint swatches, like the kind that they make for architects to pick colors. It is helpful to have these tools on hand so I can look at all different colors all at once. Your yarn is very well known for its softness. Can you talk a little about your wool, the sheep, where it comes from, and why your wool is the softest that I have ever seen? The wool is from merino sheep from Uruguay. For a while now, Uruguay has been increasing the number of merino sheep. But the majority of wool being produced in Uruguay is still Corridale. The Corridale is also of a good quality. And you will know Corridale from our Gruesa yarn. It is a very good wool. But now we are trying to work with merino. And, as I said, the merino production in Uruguay is growing. We are trying to use the softest merino available. And it is still being produced in good quantities here. Also, the manner in which yarn is spun makes a significant difference in its softness. Although there is a little contradiction with pilling, I mean to say that when you use a softer wool, it gives a little more pilling. But it is a trade-off. The softer it is, the more pilling you get. But us, in our case, for our famous worsted, we prefer to use a softer wool that pills a little more. And the people who knit end up really enjoying it and find that the fabric is comfortable against the skin. Again, we chose to do something that others hadn't already done. But since we didn't have much experience, we ended up inventing some things that didn't already exist. And does the dyeing process have an effect on the softness of the wool?
Bueno, hacemos procesos de teñido que traten de dañar lo menos posible a la lana.
We use a dyeing process that damages the wool the least amount possible.
Y tratamos de no poner prácticamente ningún tipo de
we work with specific temperatures and we avoid using harmful chemicals that more industrial companies use.
Exigencias a la lana.
We think that our way of doing things helps preserve the softness of the wool. Our artisan process takes care of every single kilo, and it allows us to keep the wool almost as soft as it was on the original sheep. Uruguay is well known for its high-quality wool. But why Uruguay? It is close to Argentina and other countries that also produce wool. But Uruguay has made a real name for itself. Do you know why this is?
Bueno, hay un primer determinante físico, es decir, hay muy buenas pasturas que dan muy buenas.
Well, there is a physical influence. We have very good pastures that are good for raising sheep and cows. And also, the country has really worked to develop the manner that our wool is cared for and processed. And although other countries also raise sheep, they often focus their industry on meat production and not wool production. They have been working over the past few years and developing, and we have succeeded in improving the quality of merino wool in Uruguay, which was developed by our farming industry. It has been the effort of our agricultural producers and the washers. It is a collective effort that has caused Uruguay to be a famous producer of wool. And if people want to buy your wool, where can they find it?
Bueno, la lana malabrigo se consigue en
Malabrigo wool is available in countries such as the USA, Canada, England, Scandinavia, Germany. We also have sellers in Sweden, France, Spain, Australia, and a number of other countries. Also, I think that over the internet, you can order from one country and they will send it to a different one. I would love to know, why did you choose the name Malabrigo? Abrigar in Spanish means to warm, to protect, or to shelter. Therefore, Malabrigo means badly sheltered.
Es curioso, pero para explicarlo se hace un poco largo. Malabrigo es un pequeño pueblo en Uruguay, una pequeña estación de tren que tiene ese nombre porque
it's funny, but the explanation is a bit long. Malabrigo is a small village in Uruguay with a small train station. It has that name because it is open to the wind and it is very cold because of the mountain air that it gets. It is actually colder than other areas. So, first of all, we appreciated being able to name our company after a village in Uruguay, in a rural area where they produce wool. Also, we said to ourselves that it is a bit ironic, a little bit of a word game. We choose a name that corresponds to a village in a wool-producing area, and it is ironic and playful. And finally, we have a third possibility. We see Malabrigo as a bit of an imaginary place, a place that doesn't actually exist, that is so cold that people have to always be knitting. Sort of an imaginary place like Macondo or Santa Maria. If you remember, Macondo was the imaginary city in the book 100 Years of Solitude, and Santa Maria was a city imagined by Juan Carlos Onetti. In this place, in Malabrigo, people are always knitting because it is cold. Obviously, they knit with wool. Everybody knits at least a little bit in this imaginary place. And is there anything else that you want to talk about? Maybe some publicity for something? This is a chance for you to talk to people if you want to. I would like to say that when we go to festivals and markets and talk to people who knit, it seems that people perceive and appreciate the effort and care that we put into producing our wool. And people then put a similar amount of care and effort into working with our wools and in producing beautiful garments. Knitters who work with our products seem to approach their knitting with a similar feeling that we have when we are producing our wool, and this makes us feel really good. We know that our product doesn't end when it is sold. The sentiment is carried through the commercial sale, and it continues until the final product. And people enjoy not only knitting with our product, but also using and wearing their finished garment. And you? Do you knit? I knit only a very little bit, only sometimes squares for maybe a scarf, just to see the logic of the colors when they are knitted up. But I haven't arrived at making garments. But my wife? Yes, she knits very well. And so you always have hand-knit socks?
Sí, sí.
Yes, yes.
Muy bien. Bueno, muchas gracias por hablar conmigo.
Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for talking to me today. Now I need to end this interview so I can go buy myself a lot of yarn. Thank you.
I have been a wool knitter for many a year, and my stitches were worked in much yarn without cheer. But now I have found me the yarn I adore, and I'll sell my sweet soul for Malabrigo amour. And it's yes, dear, thank you. Let me have a bit more, sure I will be content with Malabrigo galore.
I know, we have kept you long enough with this monumental Methuselahian podcast that feels like it will never end, probably for both of us, after all of the editing, interviewing, traveling to Uruguay, traveling to Long Island, gerbil adopting, self-promoting, music recording craziness that we did just for you. But since, as far as Deborah is concerned, the podcast is edited and she isn't going to listen to this before it goes up, I thought I would put in one last bit of self-promotion, because why not? And I'm not even going to play the self-promotion music because that would involve a couple more minutes of editing. And I want to get this out and I really, really need to go to bed. It's getting late. But my last bit of self-promotion is that Deborah and I have made an Amazon store. Yay! We thought that we would share with you some of the books we like, including the book that we co-wrote, which is Europe, A Savvy Girl's Guide, which is up there. And operas I love, knitting books Deborah thinks you might like. So you link to this Amazon store offer page. It's one thing self-promoting. It's another thing promoting other great artists. And we even put the box set to Fraggle Rock up there because you know what? Sometimes you just need the box set to Fraggle Rock. So that's all. I will just sneak this little bit of self-promotion in where no one will notice until it's too late.
It's neat and it's sweet, it's a ding-dong treat. Knitting socks for little feet.
Just knitting with your knitting all day long.
You know, knitting's friendly and knitting's fun.
Knitting's good for everyone, and that is why we sing this knitting song.
With knit one pearl, two, what's a doozer gonna do with a gall?
You have done it. You finally made it to the end of our longest episode ever.
It's just that we had a lot to talk about.
Exactly. And I'm worried that we'll always have a lot to talk about and they'll always be this long, which I guess isn't a bad thing. I mean,
and Mom does have other things to do. I want to give a big thank you to the kind people at Malabrigo. Thank you so much for receiving me and my colleagues and my friends. Thank you for giving us a tour. Thank you for doing the interview. And I hope we'll stay in touch because you're kind of cool, actually.
Katie's Critters, the place where I adopted the gerbils, they are always, always needing more pet supplies, more pet food. If you want to adopt a cute animal, adopt it from them. Don't go to the pet store. These animals need homes. They have like a million guinea pigs now because all those moms have probably given birth to their baby pigs.
Coming up in a future episode, I have an interview with 100 Pure Wool, which is another wool company out of Uruguay, and I'll talk about my experience visiting them. We are also going to be podcasting together from New York City. I don't know how many podcasts we're going to do while I'm there, but it would make sense if we did two because we're together and that would make it easier.
And I complain more about knitting, possibly on both of them.
Likely on both of them. Well, I can guarantee there will also be complaints about knitting after we go to Rhinebeck and Melanie is surrounded by knitters for an entire day.
No, you said there was pie. You said there was sheep and pie.
There is pie.
Sheep and pie.
Melanie, I will see you in a week and a day.
Okay.
And to all our listeners, we'll be podcasting again soon. And thank you for tuning in. If you want to reach us, you can visit our website at www.savvygirls.ca. That's SAVVYGIRLS.ca. If you want to email us, you can reach Melanie at melanie@savvygirls.ca. Or me, I am Deborah at SavvyGirls.ca. We'll catch you next time.
Okay, bye.
My cardigan would look silly without long green stripes.
Don't shout.
I'll shout if I want to. And do you know why?
Why?
Because I hate knitting.
Melanie, go tend to your knitting, kitten.
Oh, I hate knitting. I hate knitting.